Welcome to the T-Hood Bobcast! I'm Leland Steele.
And I'm Moby.
Hello, Moby.
Hello, Leland. Hello, Newman.
Well, I don't know. Well, I guess we'll see. We'll see what happens with this episode, as we are kind of just doing a bit of a riff show.
Yeah. It's kind of an experimental show, I thought of, because I keep mentioning this, D-list actor that I'm trying to get on the show as a guest host, and I'm kind of bugging him, but trying to not bug him too much. I hope he doesn't listen to the podcast. Yeah. The first time I'm saying, please, guest, don't listen to the podcast. Don't. Yeah. So I was trying to get him on, and he was supposed to be on last month, and then it was delayed too late. He had a shoot, and then this month, he just hasn't read the message, that or he's blocked me or something like that. So,
oh, probably the latter.
Yeah, you know, if he was smart. So I had this. So basically, it came to a time where, you know, we only have a few days left to get this going here. And I thought of, you know, I mean, there's always other options. You know, our guests basically, you know, want to fondle us to get back on the show. You'd think that's a joke. It's actually not. I constantly get requests from our former guests to come back on. So that was an option. I maybe could have dug up a new guest. I basically had an idea, which is, you know, we kind of had fun shooting the shit with my brother last time about, you know, T-HUD and what we did growing up with drinking board games. And I'm not exactly going that route, but my idea was, let's just do what we did a lot of in person, which is complain. And so, you know, let's just have the T-HUD Bitch Fest, where we try to keep it on topic with our three topics, but we just complain about shit. And maybe we start with some banter. I know you've got something, and since you've got something prepared, I mean, it's amazing. I want to roll out the red carpet, so.
I might have to retire after.
Yeah, I'll buy a lottery ticket.
I'll start. So I just wanted to ask you, this particular thing is started to really gain a lot of traction and popularity, and I think it's going to become a viable option for a lot of creators and artists. Are you familiar with non-fungible tokens?
No.
So if something is fungible, it means that thing and any like thing has a same value. So like a $5 Canadian bill compared to another $5 Canadian dollar bill, those two items are fungible because they're worth the exact same. If I took a fiver from you and gave you one in exchange, you wouldn't really care because it's still $5. Now, obviously, a $5 Canadian is not fungible with a $5 American or you know, 5 euros or whatever, right? Non-fungible tokens are like a type of like crypto token that are part of a what's called a blockchain, which is basically a blockchain is a record of cryptography that kind of links them together to give it this like almost like this unique ID, or people are like to really simplify it like a certificate of authentication. So it makes like an NFT is a unique item, which also prevents it from being duplicated. And obviously with NFTs, like there's a lot of advantages, a market of goods that if it's electronic and virtual, it costs nothing to transport or really pennies to store because they've been tokenized. And it's essentially that's what like the stock market is, right? Though the stock market, the difference is that the stock market doesn't take advantage of blockchaining during tokenization. So it's different, but it's like the other side of the coin almost, if you're following me, right? And blockchains are incredibly common with cryptocurrencies. Apparently, you can even attach physical items to an NFT. That can be kind of part of this blockchain. For example, like if a music artist, right, they put out a song and they tokenize it and it becomes an NFT. And they want to attach to the buyer, say if it was going for $20 for this NFT, attached to it would be a year of free concerts for that particular artist. Now that NFT can be resold by the person that bought it. So they're not buying the rights to that artist's music, but they're buying that specific NFT. So the buyer becomes the owner. They can trade it. They can sell it. They can, you know, buy more and hope that they'll increase in price. Because again, they're unique items. It's like a collectible almost, right? So a normal practice for NFTs is like the creator or artist will always get a percentage every time that NFT is sold. It's like it would serve as a royalty. So if you put out maybe 20 NFTs, and it could be 20 of the same thing, but they all have different serial numbers essentially. So there are still unique within that group, within that specific item. And as those get, you know, if you put them up for $5 or whatever, an NFT, and they keep getting resold and resold, and they accumulate more value and become more rare and more sought after like any normal collectible would, that artist is still getting like whatever percentage they may have built into that blockchain as for royalties, right? So they're just making, they're continuing to make money on their creation across multiple different buyers, and they really don't have to do anything. So it's cutting out like a record label, for instance, right? It's cutting out this middleman step and putting more in the pocket of artists and stuff. And what turned me on to these is actually I've heard two distinct segments on like CBC Radio of driving into and out of work about NFTs this week. And I'm like, oh, these sound really cool. I'm going to look into these more. The first one I heard was specifically about NBA Top Shots. Do you have any idea what a NBA Top Shot is?
No.
Basically, it's an electronic trading card that the NBA has put out. It's like video clips of like big plays from specific players, signature shots. They come with like a full stat readout of that player. And again, all completely unique using this blockchain, this rarefication kind of thing. Like an example, like if you have LeBron slamming this dope-ass spinning dunk, right? So if you put out like 50 of those top shots, and it's literally just like a 5-10 second video clip of this dunk, each individually numbered. So you have, and if you had Moby like number 1 of 50 in this set, that's going to be more valuable generally than some of the higher clips, like versus some of that maybe have number 26 of 50, right? Even though they're the exact same clip, but they are unique because they're an NFT. It seems really cool and really innovative. Like you can go on, and if you just Google NBA Top Shots, you'll go on and you'll be able to buy like a booster pack. It'll come with like, depending on the rarity of the pack, you get a certain number of top shots in it.
No, it's amazing. Like I'm thinking, you know, here's just a really practical idea. So we release 100 cards of your and my face on it, and the listener gets to donate to Patreon as his special bonus. So 1 to 100, and you get to donate to our Patreon as your reward.
I'll program it into the blockchain.
Let's do it. Because we know those coffers can't handle any more gold.
Well, and you know what's really smart about the NBA and these top shots is like even with on the site where you would buy the top shots, they've set up a secondary market. So literally you can see some of the top users and some of the top traders via their username on the Top Shot site, right? So if you got one you want to sell or trade, you just put it into that secondary marketplace that they've already built. Because I assume NBA, I don't know, I don't know how the like the royalty blockchain system works for NBA. Obviously, the NBA is getting a cut every time one of these Top Shots is getting sold or traded, right?
Right.
I don't know what that works out for like the specific players. I have no idea what kind of backdoor deals the players might now be able to or not be able to do, because technically are they NBA employees? Is that kind of how that works? So therefore the NBA kind of, you know, is the rights holder. I don't even know if that's the right language, right? You know what I mean?
No, but I get you. Well, what I like about it, I think it's totally scalable. So, I mean, you had mentioned NBA. I'm a sports guy, but not really for basketball. But I'm trying to extrapolate this to shit that I'm actually into. And like, you know, for example, outside of the podcast, my number one interest is naval history. And I'm thinking like if my favorite content creator who actually, his name's Drakinafel, what he does on the side, he runs a website, other than being on YouTube, he runs a website where he collects very rare photos of ships and scans them in his computer. Very high quality. People can go on his website, look at them. As long as they cite him, they can use them. And I'm thinking, like, if he released prints or a card or something, a hologram of it, you know, numbered, even him with his, you know, 250,000 YouTube subscribers, which isn't a ton, I think he'd make good coin from that. And I think people would buy and resell. So I think it's scalable to a lot of things.
Oh, yeah. You can blow it up and you can blow it right back down, right? I mean, again, for it, it can really cater to individual creators. There are talks, I believe, of adopting something similar for the NHL soon. And actually, one of the large stories out of all this NFT stuff lately is that Jack Dorsey, the guy who created Twitter, is selling the very first tweet ever for upwards of $2.5 million as an NFT. Like, it's fucking ridiculous. Yeah, it's nuts. So as far as like investing in NFTs, like a la some type of cryptocurrency, probably not a really good idea, because it's like investing in a collectible card almost, right? It's like investing in any type of collectible, I suppose. You are risking.
Yeah.
It seems like way more of a gamble than anything else, right?
It does, but I would try it. I mean, if you could get in low with someone that is popular, that you think is going to be someone that other NFT people are going to want, you know, that'd be cool. I'm trying to think of, you know, an example, you know, maybe something like Nathan Fillion or something like that from Firefly. Like that guy is so popular no matter what he does. So if there's something from him, I think you can make, you know, money off that. I don't know. You're into Star Trek, so now my mind's going to like, is there any way you could do Star Trek? Mind you, probably binged all the Star Treks in the last month since we talked. So
I actually did recently just finish Enterprise. So that's in the last, I think in 2021, it's been Deep Space Nine, Voyager, and Enterprise so far.
Your ability to consume content always amazes me. So
well, Lester, if you're interested in NBA Top Shots, currently as of last night when I was looking and doing some research, which would have been March 10th, all the Top Shot boosters are completely sold out on the website. Basically at the very bottom, you said when we're going to come back in, they're going to, well, we'll drop them when we want to drop them. So you can sign up for an email notification if you want to get notified when these sporadic pack drops for NBA Top Shots happen, if you want to try to get in on the ground floor.
Absolutely. And same thing, listener, goes for the T-HUD mugshots. So as soon as those start coming out, you know, snap them up, baby. They're going to go high. Anyways, on that note, I'm trying to think if I've got any sort of banterish stuff. I really don't. I kind of just prepared to complain.
Okay, well, let's... I don't really bring anything. I didn't bring anything for me to specifically complain about. But listener knows that I'll be able to pull anything out and be able to complain about pretty much anything. So before we get on the hate train, I'll bring up one more piece of banter. And I just want to talk about season 2 of The Mandalorian, because I did watch that recently as well.
Yes.
I've gotten Disney Plus again. My beautiful girlfriend Emma really wanted Disney Plus. I'm like, well, you know, I'm thinking about getting anyway, so just wait. I got it. She made her a profile. Somehow it works across the world. Nobody cares. Simp. But anyways, I watched Mando season 2. Man, it was fucking dope. It was so dope.
Oh my fucking God. Okay, spoiler alert, listener. We're going full spoilers. You got to go full spoilers with Mandalorian season 2.
You ain't
two.
Never go full.
Okay, this is going to be like a fucking like off-the-cuff segment, I can tell. But anyways, whatever. Oh,
yeah.
Let's do it.
Yeah.
Okay, I mean, you know, where do you want to start?
I don't know. It just like, it felt like it fucking blew the first season out of the water. And the first season was great.
First season was great.
Yeah. This is like literally the only Star Wars property that I like entirely. I entirely like
I entirely like this. That's hilarious. That's so you.
So, okay. Here's the thing. It's incredibly simple storytelling. The episodes, yes. the arc, the plot of every episode, ridiculously simple, but it just brings so much flash with it that's what it, you know, it was simplified for a purpose. It's not simplified because the writers are terrible writers. You know what? You get what? Get where I'm trying to.
Yeah. Absolutely. Here. Absolutely.
And I really think it just like, it's what Star Wars should like, how a Star Wars story just should be told. Just tell me a simple, cool ass story. I don't really need additional fucking melodrama or all that crap. You know what I mean?
No, it's, you know, it's interesting. We'll get into why I'm using this particular cliche. It's just a man making his way through the galaxy, you know, for the most part. He's got the MacGuffin, which is Baby Yoda, Grogu. But you're right. It's interesting. My thought is like the Skywalker saga is almost like glitz. It's like, you know, this shiny hallways, beautiful forests, sparkling quartz in the desert and stuff like that. The Mandalorian feels more grounded. It takes place in the real world where there's dust, grime, rust everywhere. People are just people. I mean, I guess there's aliens too. And, you know, the weight of the galaxy is not laying on the main character's shoulders and thus not laying on the shoulders of the viewer. You know, it's just a story of people in this world. The one benefit of the Skywalker saga is it established this galaxy. So we know norms, we know what an X-Wing is, we know there's Star Cruisers, Stormtroopers, things like that. So it's cool because that stuff's already been established by the Skywalker saga. But now it's someone in some characters that are actually just living in it.
Right.
And it takes time. Even though the episodes are small, you know, they can be 25 minutes, 40 minutes. They take their time, all of them with camera shots. They'll like show people walking for 10 seconds or something like that. Like people just do stuff without quick camera cuts and like jerks between, you know, the flash on a lightsaber. Oh, you know, there's Darth Maul or something like that. It's like, no, just take a breath, live in the galaxy, have a conversation.
Yeah, it's really like the anti-prequel, right? Mentality of filmmaking almost. Because like the prequels very much were like that quick cut, CGI action, 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 action kind of shit, right? So that being said about the Skywalker saga, then were you, how did you feel when Luke showed up in the last episode to grab Grogu?
I like the idea of it. I believe it was rushed or they kept a very small team doing the CGI on it because I felt the CGI was poor, distractingly poor on Luke.
Yeah, it was definitely subpar.
So that was a disappointment. And they doubled up, by the way. I don't know if you know, but Disney has now invented a de-aging technology for voices. So that was actually Hamill's voice de-aged.
Okay.
The irony is that de-aged voice was better than the CGI. And Disney's had, like, since 2011's Tron Legacy to work on their de-aging.
Yeah.
I liked it. Did you notice, I know you're not a Star Wars aficionado, but did you notice that it kind of mirrored the very famous Darth Vader hallway scene from Rogue One?
Immediately what I thought of. Yeah, absolutely. So unfortunately, I had that it was, I almost made through all of it without spoilers, but I fucking read a stupid spoiler on some dumb article that Luke showed up. So unfortunately, I knew it was Luke. Although I'm wondering if I would have been able to put it together when the X-Wing shows up, you know, and you see the green saber and the robot hand. I don't know if I would have been able to put that together. Again, I'm not the biggest Star Wars fan, but I unfortunately did have it spoiled for me, despite it being really fucking awesome. That whole scene when he's just getting to the control room was just dope as hell. Like, it was so good.
It was really good. I remember, you know, I've watched with listener Joe, I've watched the whole series with him and I with her headphones, just using there's some sort of Disney Play app or something like that. And yeah, we were both like, ooh, ah, and it was just so cool to see Luke cut away those dark troopers. I was distracted being a super nerd in that, like, the dark troopers, I mean, these are like some of the most powerful bad guys that the Empire has. And they make some really dumb moves on Luke. Like, some of them don't shoot at him. They just like try to walk up to him to grab him. And I'm like, you're not a 1996 Star Wars game on, like, you know, N64. You can have better AI than walk towards incredibly aggressive and powerful adversary and try to touch him.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, but it was cool. It was cool to see him, you know, beat them down and everything like that. And I thought, you know, my favorite part of Luke there was not to do with Luke. It was that the Mandalorian had to give up Grogu and, you know, he was like his surrogate dad and just the emotions of that and of Grogu going with Luke. You know, I really like that. I don't know why I was emotionally underwhelmed by it, to be quite honest. Like, I was like, oh, okay, this is cool. Yeah, I knew from the glove. I knew from the green lightsaber that it was Luke. I mean, I'm that much of a nerd, but it's like, okay, that's cool. And maybe I was disappointed that it wasn't Sebastian Stan, a.k.a., you know, Bucky Barnes or whatever it is, because he looks exactly like Mark Hamill and he would have been much better than CGI. Fuck, just put like dub Hamill's voice over it if you want and use Sebastian Stan. But the guy's such a dead ringer. He's a Disney actor anyways because he's from the Avengers. Put him in there. So,
yeah,
it's my opinion.
So I was incredibly impressed with Rosario Dawson.
I think she made a great Ahsoka.
I love Ahsoka. Ahsoka's like one of my favorite Star Wars characters.
Oh my goodness.
Has been ever since I watched you know, the Clone Wars. Oh man, I love her. It was great. Her series is going to be fucking amazing. Like, it's going to be so good.
You know what I liked? I like two things. Number one, they made her like cut down so many bad guys in such awesome ways that she was satisfying enough just to have in that one episode. Number two, they did a really good job of like helping her help out, actually, you know, promote the storyline, but then have that reveal that was actually the biggest reveal for the season for myself and listener Joe was, you know, where's Thrawn? And listener Joe, I don't know how many people on this podcast know who I'm talking about, but he's like one of the most emotionally controlled, stoic men you will ever meet. Like survivalist, big guy, likes to, you know, spend his time in the woods. And I remember he literally was going like, he was, you know, having a, you know, an issue that he needs to clean his underwear after. He literally sounded like that. And I did too, by the way, but everybody expects that of me. because we're both like, because it's like Thrawn. Now, you know Thrawn, Leland. You know Thrawn, right? You know who he is.
Not really. I mean, I know that they've brought him back in after decanonizing everything, but I don't really know who he is.
Okay. Time for some education.
Okay.
Grand Admiral Thrawn is the single most popular and important character in Star Wars who has not yet been in a movie or the show, period. He's in the first scene, a book called Heir to the Empire, which was the first licensed Star Wars books to continue the story after Return of the Jedi. Timothy Zahn wrote it, I think it was 1993. And Thrawn, he's like a blue-skinned alien who's a Grand Admiral for the Empire. He's like the only alien Grand Admiral because he's so competent. He's not like evil or bumbling like everyone else in the Empire. He's not like some quasi-Nazi. He has his own motivations for order and chaos that are huge spoilers, but hey, we're in spoiler territory. Thrawn knows that this really powerful alien species from outside of the galaxy is going to threaten the galaxy. So he actually wants to unite the Empire and the New Republic. This is like the long game. But in the meantime, he believes he has to subjugate the New Republic. I mean, they're rebels. But he wins by like studying whatever civilization he's attacking or planet. He studies their art. And he's like very cultured, very controlled, very like high class, prissy admiral. But he treats his people exceptionally well. He's not mean. He doesn't just like kill random people because they fail him. He's very fair. He's very just. He's almost like a good guy playing for the bad guys. So, yeah. So to have Thrawn, you know, we know now he's going to enter the Ahsoka series at some point. I mean, that's awesome. He's the biggest character that's missing from Star Wars in live action.
Oh, that sounds awesome. That sounds really cool. I like that. Because it just always feels like, again, because in general, it feels like Star Wars stories are simplified. We don't really get those characters that are more gray. Right. And that's also why I like Ahsoka so much. Like, I love the idea of like the gray Jedi Order or whatever, like a great Jedi, you know, harnessing both sides of it and finding the balance. I just fucking love that. It just makes sense to me. It just makes sense because you can't, have all of one thing and none of another. It just makes no sense to me.
No. I mean, there's so many ways, and I want to continue to discuss this because I'm giddy. You got to bring up Katie Sackhoff as Bo-Katan, too.
Yes. Man, she right? still looks fucking amazing. I love her so totally. Much. I love her so much.
She is perfect. She absolutely loves the character. Like, there's a picture of her dad on set for the Skywalker scene that we just discussed. She's so good. And people, like, online on YouTube are like, wow, they brought in the voice actor to be the live action person. This is amazing. I'm like, guys, like, I don't know if you were like kids that are 12 years younger than me. Katie Sackhoff, Starbuck. Like, this was the geek thing. And you were there with me. This was the geek thing of the 2000s. Battlestar yeah. Galactica, the remake. And she was like one of the primary characters. She's sci-fi royalty. So she's not some voice actor coming from behind the veil to play Bo-Katan. It was the reverse. It was this live action sci-fi, you know, royalty woman doing voice acting. That is the anomaly. Her playing the live action character is not the anomaly. But what I really like is how, of course, they had the foresight in the animated series to make Bo-Katan look like Katie Sackhoff just in case she ever entered live action.
Yeah, she's just like, she's just so fucking powerful. Like, she's just so badass, you know? Like, it's so awesome. I love seeing, you know, I love that how we got more look into the Mandalorians themselves, right? And how, like, there was clearly this division somewhere amongst these different sects of this religion, you know, this very, because they're like an entirely religious society, right? Like,
totally.
Or at least heavy religious overtones. Yeah, it was just really cool seeing the separation, how, like, they got no problem taking their helmet off and, like, and then, kind of by the end, it's like Mando is starting to almost come that way. Like, he's seeing the need for it, right? Where I think he's like, learning other things are taking precedent over the way. Like, there's more things that are part of the way, you know what I mean? It's really cool. I just like the seeing that this part of the world explored and kind of blown up, because it's an interesting part. Like, it's actually interesting.
It is actually interesting. I mean, even though I'm a Star Wars fan, you know, I was very underwhelmed by the sequel trilogy completely. And that's like the best thing that I can say about it. But you look at all the spinoffs that are coming off this show, and I don't want to jump into the spinoffs necessarily, because that's a whole other can of worms that we should discuss in the future. But here's what I'll say. So I don't want to make a political statement here, but a lot of fans were shit on for saying they don't like how Daisy Ridley and the other female characters were kind of shoveled in the sequel trilogy. I looked on so many YouTube videos trying to find any sort of fanboy putting down Gina Carano's Cara Dune, putting down Bo-Katan, putting down how Ahsoka was done. Like, the worst I found is some dude trying to argue that Ahsoka's brain tails aren't long enough. Okay, if that's really where the fanboy wants to get, like, if that's the worst thing that I can find on three female characters in Star Wars, and everything else is, like, perfect casting, want to watch their shows, spin them off, put Bo-Katan as, like, the main character. Honestly, it's kind of vindicating, because it's like, no, these geeks are not actually sexist, misogynist dinosaurs. They just want good characters played by good actors doing cool shit. Like, this isn't an Albert Einstein dissertation that you have to do with Star Wars. Just meet cool people that are interesting, do cool shit with laser guns and lightsabers in a decent, yeah, coherent story, and you'll print money. You'll print money. Rosario Dawson is a well-known actress, but she's not some, you know, A-list superstar. Disney is going to print money and get subscriptions off a show based off her, and they don't have to do anything else. They can use no-name stunt doubles for all they care that she just slices down in the rest of the show. Same goes if they ever want to spin off Bo-Katan. I mean, it's just, it's so easy to make money off Star Wars. It's so easy to make people happy. Even Timothy Oliphant, who was only in the first episode, he played that ranger guy. They didn't spin him off into a show. I actually thought they would. Maybe they will in the future. You could do anything with that guy because he's so cool. You can make a show, sell action figures, sell premium figures, look, posters, a music album. Like,
as much as I love Timothy Oliphant and loved seeing him in the opening season, opening episode, we don't need him being another cowboy. I'm sorry. He doesn't need his own spinoff. It's unnecessary. I haven't said unnecessary in a dozen episodes, but that, my friend, would be unnecessary.
Yeah. Unnecessary. Now, there is a term that hasn't come up in a while. Yeah, so I've got to jump to this because I know this is legitimately turning into a segment, but Boba Fett, like main or OG character. I think he was something I heard like he was only 7 minutes in the entire original trilogy.
Yeah.
Which is tiny, but he's there. What did you think of Boba Fett?
Oh, I mean, like they made him as badass as they could have. Like he doesn't need his armor to be a fucking badass either.
No.
Anybody that's seen season two is immediately thinking of when he's beating the fuck out of those stormtroopers. Like, it's brutal. It is brutal, and it's like nearly borderline for a Disney prop. You know what I mean? For a Disney property.
Yeah,
the brutality. Because
I've never seen stormtrooper armor smashed like that before. You know, it's pretty brutal violence. And I think the only reason they got away with it is because it's, you know, armor and masks that are breaking. Yeah, it was very badass. They made him into, you know, real living, breathing character. You know, Timura Morrison brought his Maori kind of fighting style to the show, which was really cool. I also liked how you did actually see him in the armor doing badass stuff with the guns and stuff like that. So, yeah, I thought it was great. I saw this video about it, you know, behind the scenes where Robert Rodriguez, who Boba Fett's his favorite character, he wanted to direct that episode. Apparently he saw like a 2-minute fighting scene. He's like, no, I'm going to make this a 9-minute fighting scene. That's what he said. He's like, I'm just going to make it badass. He said, I want it to be so satisfying that whatever happens, you know, if I never got a chance to work on the show or if Boba Fett, you know, disappeared, that it was satisfying for fans. And I really respect that.
Yeah.
I really respect that.
So. Well, yeah, he paid the character a lot of service. And I really just like that he stuck around even after he got his armor. Like, it was cool that we had this like team assembled, right?
Yeah.
I actually really liked the episode with Bill Burr's character back.
Yes, that's where I was going to go.
But that was a dope episode.
Oh man, that conversation, of course, that he has with that guy.
Just
so
finally intense. He pulls the pistol and just fucking, oh man, just blasts him. Like my jaw, like dry, was like, whoa, shit, that just happened. Like,
yeah, it was dark as fuck, but it was a great conversation. It was something you would not really see good in the Star Wars saga. Like, let's talk about murder.
Yeah.
It's cool. Make a Bill Burr show, you know, make a show about the sniper now. That's the thing. You can spin off this shit. What about the mother with her eggs? Spin her off, you know, the Star Wars egg central. Not? Right at this point,
so that was like that episode. Speaking of that character, that was like the one filler episode, right? Basically, this season.
Okay, the filler episode for me was the one where he crashes into the ice cave.
That is the one I'm thinking of. Sorry, I know she actually is in a couple. She is more than just a singular episode, but yeah, that's for sure the one that I'm thinking of. But even like their filler episodes this season pushed the universe forward because we met the space cops, the two space cops, right? And we see the other side, because really like the Mando and all his activities are like this third party to everything, really. And yeah, there's some overlap with the imps, but now we're also getting overlap with the other side too, right? So I kind of like seeing them putting about, even if they don't seem like they're bumbling or ineffective. Like, I mean, they came in, they saved Mando. They had the kind of their little quippy back and forth with each other. But it's also nice because it kind of shows that it shows some of the respect that Mando, even when he's got these warrants out for him, still is getting. Like, he still has his reputation, right? And there's the good and the bad to his rep. But the one side can see more of the good stuff that he's doing versus the, you know, the by the book, we got to take them in kind of shit, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. No, you're completely right. I mean, I don't know what else to say except that it's highly recommended, listeners. So, yeah, if you've got Disney Plus, you know, if you're bored of WandaVision, which apparently everybody's watching WandaVision, you know, give it a look.
Yeah, I've yet to watch WandaVision, but
I've watched the first episode or two, but I don't know if I'll stick with it. You know, I've got better things to do, like nothing. So, I shouldn't bash it like that. It's got Elizabeth Olsen. Come on, you know.
Yeah, I am excited for Falcon and the Winter Soldier, though.
Yes, yes.
That's dropping pretty soon.
Yep, two really cool characters. Should be great to see them together. Need more Bucky. Need to have the Buck. The Buck stops here.
I got a fever. The only prescription is
more Buck. All right. Well, on that note, can I start bitching about shit?
All right. What do you got? What do you got?
Well, I got a few, and I don't even know if I'm going to get in all of them. I'll just get into the ones I feel like as they go. Okay. Here's one I wanted to throw it as kind of a discussion. Obviously, we've talked about our favorite shows on streaming. They're all switching from a non, like, drop them all at once to, like, a drop them once a week sort of model, it seems. I don't like that. I want to bitch about that. Like, I would rather be able to binge at my own pace, which may be, like, a day or two. So, whatever. Fuck you. That's what I want to do. Thoughts? Or do you not mind something dropping once a week or whatever?
No, I think it is. I think it's bullshit. I think it's ridiculous, like attempts to squeeze every additional penny out of their services as possible. I think it's, I think it's underhanded, quite honestly. And it's like, it's a step backwards from streaming services, because with streaming services, it always felt to me like the draw was that the consumer can consume its content in any fashion that they so please. Now we're being restricted again. Mm-hmm. Things are getting turned back to this fucking bullshit cable television crap. If I want to sit down and watch 9 episodes of WandaVision in a single night, then I should fucking be able to do that if I'm paying for your service. That's what I'm paying for.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree.
I'm glad you brought this up, though, because specifically about WandaVision, I saw numerous Twitter threads about back and forth about people saying how WandaVision specifically was better because they couldn't binge it all. Because they were forced to consume it week by week, they felt that it became a better show, and that if you sat down and binged it, you wouldn't get as much out of the show as you would have watching it week by week. And I thought, well, maybe I'll do an experiment and I'll watch WandaVision 1 episode per week and see what my thoughts are on it. Even though it's all released now, and if I could go watch it in a single night, maybe I won't do that, and maybe I'll see what it's like. But like, to what fucking end now, I'm thinking, right? I'm already second guessing that plan.
You know what? If you did that, I would do that with you to like, I'd restart it because I kind of forget it. But honestly, if you want to do that, we'll do 1 a week. Very, very manageable. And then we'll discuss it once we're done. Both the show and the slow draw. You want to do that?
Yes, let's do it. Let's do that.
Okay. Let's try to watch the first episode before the end of Sunday this week. And we'll go like, and, you know, next week we'll do one before the following Sunday, and we'll just start doing that.
All right.
And in the meantime, in the next 2 weeks, you can binge like all 60 seasons of Doctor Who. So I know you'll have the time for that somehow. Okay. I mean, I've got stuff to bitch about. If something comes up, just say, Moby, I want to bitch about this.
Okay.
There's some stuff that's not relevant. Okay, here's something that I want to bitch about that I don't think you've ever played World of Warships, right? Or did you try it for a little bit?
I think I tried it once or twice, but a long time ago.
So here's what I want to bitch about World of Warships. So World of Warships, it's supposedly a free-to-play game. I mean, it is, but of course you can pay for premium time, buy premium ships, crates, all that stuff to boost yourself quicker, get better ships and whatnot. And it runs tier 1 to 10, so like the tier 1 ships are like little floaty boats with like 2 pew-pew guns that fight each other. It's still fun, but the tier 10 is like, you know, massive battleships that didn't even exist for the most part. The problem is with their premium ships, they're ships that can only be bought. the ship's prices increase exponentially. So by the time like you're at a tier 7, it's like $65 for just the bare bones ship. That's not nonetheless packages that you can buy with ships. And like to buy like a tier 9 or tier 10 ship is literally like $120 or $130 just for the ship. It's like 1.5 times the cost of a game. So World of Warships, when I started, was, you know, regularly releasing premium ships from pretty much tier 3, sometimes even tier 2. They had a bunch of tier 2 premiums all the way up to like tier 9 or 10. It's great. Spread it out. Well, last couple years, it's like they've released maybe one that was tier 6, and most of them are like 8 or 9, just as a cash grab, just to make like $100 or $90 off every single ship they release. And I don't know if they're like, they've just expanded their staff to the point that they literally cannot afford to make, you know, cheaper ships. Because like a tier 2 ship would cost $7 if it was a premium, something like that. Tier 3, maybe $10. You know, it's kind of cool if you like the ship or starting out.
Yeah.
But I also think they're shooting themselves in the foot because new players really kind of have to scrap and scrape to get to a level where it's fun, because there's not really many premium ships they can play at lower levels, which then they can gain experience to buy the better ships to move up to the higher tiers. They basically have to play just dumb ships, the few dumb ships to get to like tier 6, where they can finally start buying decent stuff. And so I think Wargaming, the company that makes World of Warships, is kind of shooting themselves in the foot with that. And I just think it's such an obvious cash grab.
Yeah, that sounds like it. Do you know if they're implementing something similar in like their World of Tanks and World of Planes games or whatever? Because those are the other two, right?
Oh boy, you're right. And that is a fantastic question. I haven't played them. That is a fantastic question. I do not know the answer, but I would hesitantly say perhaps yes.
Yeah, I bet, eh?
I bet, especially World of Tanks. That's their big one. World of Warplanes is apparently like the red-haired stepchild of the three. So if they did that too much, like if nobody wants to play the game anyways and it's like, hey, buy this 6-engine super bomber so you can play co-op versus AI, you know, only $199.99, you know, people are not going to buy that for a game like that. but that's a fantastic question, Leland.
Yeah, no, that seems to be the direction though, that like your free-to-play game eventually has to go. It quickly has to become pay-to-win, right? Because you can't afford to keep a free-to-play game running for very long unless people are actually paying you, despite it being free.
Yeah. Now, what I will give them is that the premium ships, these high-tier premium ships they're making, yeah, about half of them are pretty darn good, but half of them are pretty reasonable, or if not low, on the skill or the goodness tree. There's some good grammar for you, the goodness tree. And, you know, a lot of the mainline ships are actually quite good as well. But they also, of course, to get through the mainline quickly at all and not have an Uber slog, you have to have a premium account and, like, spend doubloons to buy experience to, like, get through those ships quicker and progress to the higher and higher tiers, even of the regular lines. So that's, yeah, that it's still an issue. And some of the premium ships are considered, you know, really unfair. The game is made by Russians, and a lot of the best ships are Russian ships that never even existed. They're like on paper if you're lucky. And so people just constantly get mad at the Russian bias.
The Indefatigable 2 is now a Russian ship.
Oh, I would love if Indefatigable was in that game. Oh my goodness, I'd buy that day
That's
one.
The only ship I know at all. It's like my go. It's my fallback in case I ever have to talk about warships.
You know what? It lived a proud 5 minutes in the Battle of Jutland. So Leland, you.
It was a boat.
It was a boat. Okay, I don't want to get into naval history, and I won't. But the funniest thing is, like, there was a ship two or three ahead of it, because they fight in lines, right? Back in the day, that's one ship behind another ship behind another ship, and two lines just blast against each other. Indefatigable was in the very back of the line where it blew up and died. But a few ahead of it was the HMS New Zealand, and that ship was paid for by the New Zealand people in government. They, like, collected funds. But there was a rule that whenever the ship went into battle, the steering wheel had to be replaced by a steering wheel for battle that had all these jewels embedded in the steering wheel, and the jewels were like blessed by Maori spirits, like shamans. And then the captain also had to take off his uniform and dress in a Maori war skirt to fight any battle. It was a rule. And that was the only ship that went through like epic battles and was barely touched. I think it got grazed by one shell. So
That's amazing. In the warship
community, everyone's like, the HMS New Zealand was like the most genius ship ever. You just have to dress in a skirt and have like spiritually blessed war steering wheel, and your ship is invulnerable.
Steering wheel.
I think it was the ship in front of it and behind it were like vaporized into dust. Oh, and that ship was like perfectly fine through the whole battle. Well, so I had to bring up that story.
I bet you listener David Dave was going to love that anecdote.
Oh, yeah? Is he like weird shit like that?
Well, he is from New Zealand, so he'll love it.
Yeah, you should look up the HMS New Zealand. I mean, it had a pretty cool career, so.
I would not be surprised if he knows all about it. I bet you he's that kind of guy.
That's awesome. Next thing I want to bitch about is Nintendo Switch shovelware. So the Nintendo Switch is a really popular console, obviously.
Nintendo? Shovelware?
Yeah, I know. It's like the Wii on steroids. I go to the stupid store. I don't even want to go to the store because all it is like anime hentai dating games. And like Nintendo used to have quality standards. They had their little gold seal that they put on all cartridges to show that it was like half decent quality. And the shit that they're putting on their store right now, it's like, I don't know. You and me could program how to pour Pepsi out of a can and that would go on the store. It's like anything goes. And it's like to find cool stuff, you have to sift through this. It's like, I don't care about Snake Surprise or Robbie the Bunny. It's like, I want a video game that's legitimate. And there's so much shovelware on the Nintendo Switch eStore right now.
It sells, though.
So, like, it does sell, I guess. So, like, here's the thing, too, about Nintendo. So, Nintendo, I think we've mentioned this on the podcast before. Nintendo is so different in their approach to business now from their traditional competitors, Sony and Microsoft, that Sony and Microsoft don't even necessarily compete with Nintendo anymore. So they've started to share IPs, intellectual properties, and you get Sony and Microsoft IP on Nintendo stuff. That's like how Banjo-Kazooie, very famous Banjo-Kazooie, got added to Smash Brothers on the Switch. Big, big thing. But with that, like now Sony games, Sony Trash and Microsoft Trash from their online stores are getting released on the Switch store. So it's like magnifying the amount of trash compared to even Wii.
That's funny. Oh, man.
It's really annoying. So I know you hate the Switch and Nintendo, but it's just, it's really annoying.
So is the Switch just becoming this catch-all thing now for all competitors? Like, well, it's really weird.
It is. I mean, they recognize, I mean, everybody makes money, and the Switch is kind of an Uber console in a way. The only thing it sucks at is in-person multiplayer. But mind you, I went to hell and played with Ghost Marty a couple months ago, some Zelda, whatever that Zelda is, where it's like it's prequel to Breath of the Wild. Why can I forget? I haven't played in forever, but I did that with Marty. But anyways, you know, it's good for online gaming. It's good for handheld. It's a decent console connected to your TV. So it kind of is a catch-all. Yeah, I don't know. To see Nintendo go that direction, it almost validates you if you want to, like, bust on Nintendo as being, like, a corporate whore entity or something like that. So anyways, it annoys me, so I wanted to bring that up.
You know, as I get older, I think my stance on Nintendo is laxing a little bit. You would just be a liar if you said the Switch wasn't a cool console, right? You would just be flat out lying. So I would never lie to you, listener. I would get a Switch. I would get one. Maybe one day. I don't know. I just like there's so much overlap though now with every gamer. Even if you're a strictly PC gamer, I would love to see consumer percentages of who has either a PS5 or a Microsoft something or whatever the hell, the Series, and has a Switch. Like, I would love to see this overlap in these consoles, right? And what percentage of consumer has one of the two big boys and the Switch. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that actually would be interesting. It would be interesting because it would validate, if true, you know, if you've got a, one of the other major consoles besides the Switch, that, first of all, the Switch is considered completely different, because why else would you have it? I don't think first-party Nintendo games, as good as they are still worth as much as they used to be, like system sellers. I don't know. I guess Smash Bros. For Switch might have been a system seller, but... And, yeah, Breath of the Wild, when it came out, I don't know. Yeah, it'd be interesting.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
What else do I got here? I got a few more. I don't know. I was going to bitch about delayed movies, but we've already basically done that. But I still am annoyed with delayed movies. There's like so many movies I wanted to see that should have come out last year that I can't because of coronavirus.
Yeah. So, okay. Well, let's not brush that off quite so quick. So I have a question then. That what do you think the rollout of these movies, like new release dates, is going to look like when we have some countries lagging far behind on their vaccination attempts and rollouts, like Canada versus the U.S. The U.S. is killing it in the vaccinations, especially compared to Canada. And whatever reasons, whether that's a failing of some premiers or prime ministers, not enough supply gain in Canada being shorted, blah, 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 whatever the reasons are, just there are vastly more people in the U.S. that have been vaccinated than currently in Canada. So if you look at a North American market that is really divided, as like if you're going to say, well, okay, let's put out this release into North America, when only half of North America is like can have like maybe more than 50% of occupancy in theaters, when you decide to pick a release date, like how do you think that might affect future release dates? Or if it won't, if it's just going to be, well, once this particular market in general is at a certain level, we're going to deem it fine to drop a movie into a North American audience.
Yeah, actually, you bring up a great question. I think based, if you want to talk about, say, for example, a 50% occupancy, everybody has a chair between them, something like that. I mean, how much does that help? But yeah. I think what you would see is companies with their releases basically doing gentlemen's agreements, kind of staggering the releases a week or two so that theaters, even at 50% capacity, get full just for that one main film and that there's less competition. That would be a guess. It's possible they don't and they just want to compete, but that would be a guess.
What about if, I just had a thought, if so the theater, say with 10 screens, normally they would be airing, you know, nearly say 10 movies. What if they chose to only air 5 movies or 4 movies, but just more movies in like more duplicates of screenings for particular huge blockbusters? That maybe they're given some incentive from some of the studios to, well, why don't you put our movie in 3 of your screens instead of 2 other movies or 1 other movie? And that way, for a particular draw that is, you know, projected to make a lot of at the box office, could still potentially make that much at the box office.
Hmm. Yeah, again, that's a really good point. You know, more screens would make up for any sort of difference in the amount of people that are allowed in or something like that. Give kind of a quasi-monopoly. Yeah, I think it's feasible. I think that if a movie tanks, it would tank harder and be much more embarrassing in that case.
That's very true, yeah.
Right?
That's really true.
But I think of the movies that are, I mean, at least like Top Gun 2 and Dune, those are the, you know, really the two that I think about that I want to see. I couldn't really see those tanking. I think people really want to get out. I mean, I don't know. Dune is maybe a little bit niche, but I still think there's a lot of nerds that want to see it. So I don't know. It's interesting. You bring up good points, but I sound unsure because I really don't know how to project this. I really mm-hmm. don't know how. How to project this?
Well, I mean, like there's often staggered releases in markets across the world. Like North America will often get movies, what is it, later or earlier than Europe? Is it Europe that sometimes will get a movie like a week? You know, there'll be a European release date versus a North American release date. And sometimes they'll be like a full week apart.
Yeah, I think it's Europe.
Mm-hmm.
Mind you, I think right before the pandemic, they were starting to do like same day worldwide releases a lot more often. I could be wrong about that, but I seem to remember that. Yeah, anyways. Oh, and this one. So I've started playing online chess. You know, I want to play chess so I'm a little bit more logical and, you know, which is a problem of mine. And just kind of stretch my mind, work my mind during COVID. And it's nothing, you know, crazy. It's chess.com, which will let you play free chess. But I'm trying to go to the website right now. It has different AIs to play chess. And so far, I've only played one AI. So most of the AIs are locked. Okay, so there's like a bunch of beginner, expert, master, streamer, somehow AI, like they program them in. It's really cool. But there's one adaptive AI that you have access to across the bat, and his name is Jimmy. He has this smug look on his face. I'm looking at him right now. I want to fuck you up, Jimmy. He's an adaptive chess AI. And so I start every match playing well against him, and I'm like, okay, I'm starting to kick ass, you know. Fuck you, took your queen early. And this diabolical machine understands me and starts to kick my ass and take my shit. And like the most I can ever do is draw him. He's checkmated me a few times. And I'm like, fuck you and fuck this Turing test and fuck this game. I'm like, I'm going to beat you, Jimmy. So I played him like 9 times in the past 5 days or something. Because I took a few days off because I was pissed off. There'd be days I'd play him like 3 or 4 times. And he's like this amoeba that wraps around me and becomes knowing how to beat me. And I'm like, no, you're a computer.
Oh, man, fuck that's yourself, so funny.
Jimmy. So anyway, I just, I'm frustrated. I don't want to look at him. Get off my screen.
That's really interesting, though, because that seems to me like then anyone of any skill could play against the adaptive AI and it would only adapt to their best skill level, right? Like, it would adapt enough to just eke out them their skill.
That is what Jimmy is supposed to do. It literally right. says under his description, he adjusts around your skill to make it easier or harder. So, but he gets to this point. You love draws. I mean, Jimmy would be your best friend. You'd replace him with me. But, you know, or no, replace me with him. But I hate draws, and I hate how I play this like 15-20 minute game and end in a draw with Jimmy because he adapts around my brain. And I feel like I have this computer that can run circles around my brain, which is, I guess, very possible. But anyways,
That's smart. That's smart programming. I mean, that really like you got like a mini Deep Blue that they've just uploaded, or like what's how do they make these AIs, these adaptive AIs? It just kind of blows my mind. I can't even think to comprehend how to go about creating something that can learn. Doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, me neither, man.
Makes no sense.
Me neither.
Is that the last thing on your list?
I believe it is. Yeah, it is the last thing on my list.
Well, I didn't really think of anything to bitch about myself. Well, for once, I was the positive one in the episode. I didn't complain a single time.
I love how an episode based on complaining ended up with Moby doing 100% of the complaining and Leland simply responding to it. Should be called the T-HUD Flip the Script cast.
There you go. I don't know, man. It's strange that, like, I mean, professionally, I don't feel content. I fucking hate my job.
I thought you were content because, you know, I text you and it's like you're, you know, 6 hours streaming. Great. Sounds like you're having a ball of a time during COVID.
That's true. We did have a really long stream. We were playing Dead of Winter. Do you remember that? Do you remember playing Dead of Winter as the zombie survival apocalypse game? I don't know if I actually ever played that one with you.
I don't remember that.
Played it a couple times. Yeah. It was a long ass stream. Bill ended up being the traitor. Completely fooled me. I voted to exile Elena and she wasn't the traitor. She was really pissed. I don't know. It was really fun. So, yeah, okay, I'll bitch about that. Fucking Bill, that son of a dirty rat bastard traitor.
Bill. I could see Bill like that, you know, just his kind of straight face. Yeah, you know.
Yeah, no, he was mostly quiet the whole time. Yeah. Pretended he didn't know how to play.
Dude's a serial killer. I know it deep down.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, yeah, he's a sociopath, 100%. He's got zero empathy, that man.
It's hilarious. I don't have a ton to talk about. I mean, I had fun doing this. I had fun shooting the ship, but that's all the shit I have to fling tonight, to be quite honest.
Okay. I like it. That was good. I'm actually kind of weirdly excited about our WandaVision experiment. I mean, it's going to take us 9 weeks to watch it. Now, that feels really weird to say.
That does.
So we'll be finished for the May episode, basically. We'll be able to talk about it in the May episode. Okay. Yes, we will. Well, okay. Let's have the lovely Emma of the Pointless Pair podcast on for the May episode because she loves WandaVision. She'll love to talk about WandaVision. She'll for sure love to talk about that. Actually would be really fun, I think.
That's awesome, man. Yeah, I'm totally down. I'd love to have her on the episode. So that'd be great. Can't wait to start recording at 2 a.m. And
we're very accommodating on the TT podcast. Yeah,
we are. I'll bring the smoked eels and egg liqueur to be ready for the Dutch Emma.
We can go halvesies on it.
Welcome in. Let's do it.
I learned how to say how dare you in Dutch today. Well, what was it? It was, Hoe durf je? Oh, is how dare you.
You know what? You need to learn I know right, so I know when you're completely checked out from a conversation and I can change the topic.
Oh my God, you're right.
Vrij no vriet? Vrij no vriet?
Oh, okay. Well, this is fun. Let's end the show stuff. End the show stuff. All right. Our website, ttpopcast.com. Show notes. I don't know what the show notes are going to look like for this. Honestly, it's going to be a jumble. But show notes, written content, social media feeds, all that stuff. We're on Facebook, the T-Hud Podcast, Instagram, TT Podcast. I'm Leland Steele on Twitter. That's who I've been.
I've been Moby. I used to post on the Facebook once upon a time, but for some reason I fucked off. But I'll do it again. But anyways, take care, listener.
Thanks, listener.
Bye-bye.